The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized with Closets by Design. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Welcome to a brand new episode of the best podcast in baseball. Joined this week from back in St. Louis, where I hear it's warming up, and that's not just because of the NHL trade deadline. It's, of course, Jeff Gordon, our instant offense and sports columnist at the Post-Dispatch. Jeff, we're going to talk about three up for spring training, three down, and a lineup dilemma for the Cardinals in this episode of BPIB. You up for it?
I'm ready, man. Let's do it.
All right. Cue the music.
The best fans in baseball deserve the best podcast in baseball. It's BPIB. Here's your host, Derek Gould.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined by sports columnist, instant offense, and author of Tip Sheet. It's Jeff Gordon back in the... Do you have a name for your studio? Is it the Gordo Studios, the palatial Gordo Studios of St. Louis?
It would just be my badly renovated lower level, which has survived some plumbing issues. Now it's all nice, and I can come down here and do my podcast.
Congrats. I think you should call it the Antler Cave, right? like an homage to the great antlers there at Mizzou, right?
Yeah, those are. I have done one thing to leave a mark on society, and that's it. I'm helping start those guys.
Are you helping to like launch the antlers? You're famous for it. Like, I don't think that gets covered enough. I don't think it gets talked about. What have other folks done? I drew a cartoon at Mizzou.
Well, the alma mater, you leave a mark at your alma mater for sure. That's a, I don't know if someday they'll have a statue of guys doing the antler dance outside of Mizzou Arena.
Oh my gosh. Nice. They should. They need more antler merch. And you're right, a statue, definitely. Yeah, I don't. I still have yet to leave my mark. I got to figure that out. Oh well, it won't be founding an antler group, that's for sure. But maybe like some ice cream flavor that I could invent, or something along those lines.
Doing society a solid, that would be it's a good call. I'd get to work on that.
Yeah. All right, I'll come up with something. Jeff, here in Jupiter, spring training is steaming towards a finish. 3 weeks between now and opening day. 3 weeks for the Cardinals to settle on their roster. 3 weeks for them to stay a little bit healthier than they are now, with Jordan Walker down with a knee injury for a week, and Zach Thompson dealing with a lat strain that's going to put him out for at least a month, probably more, definitely more than a month when it comes to pitching in games. So they don't want to get any unhealthier. And 3 weeks for them to figure out what direction they're going, and 3 weeks for them to find their offense. Jeff, all of this talk of threes has me thinking that maybe we should talk about three up, three down so far from spring. And then I want to present to you a discussion about a lineup dilemma that is going to be the talk of spring training. And that is, as I wrote in the newsletter, The Right Fielder, which comes out every Friday there to subscribers, is the difference between a lineup built for lumber and the lineup built for leather. I just don't really know what direction the Cardinals will go. Neither do they. But I'd like to get your feedback on it. Does that sound good?
Sounds like a good plan, man.
All right. So three up. You know, Jeff, from afar, what's been the perception of Wilson Contreras' spring there in St. Louis? Because here, it's been a thunderclap for how well he's taken to his new role, how energized he is, the size he put on, and also how well he's moving around first base.
Well, I think the it's just nice to know that he's not going to start suffering a ton of injuries from being behind the plate, because this team needs presence in the batting order, right? You look at the offense, and obviously, it's like you say, it struggled. I'm a big proponent, and you have to have some presence, you know, not just the stats you can quantify and the metrics that tell you that a guy should start hitting pretty soon, but just sheer presence, a guy that has some swagger, some confidence, who goes in the batter's box and it just – sends a message to his teammates and the other team that, okay, I'm here. I think fans have always liked that part of Wilson for sure.
Yeah. He that personality comes out because like some folks are saying, he just gets to go out there and slug. Like he's out during BP just launching these like home runs, as opposed to huddled up with the pitcher trying to work on the, on that day's game plan and stuff. He seems free. He's moving well, around well. He's strong. It's very easily that if you're talking about three ups of camp, he's number one. Very impressive. Another up is prospect J.J. Weatherholt, 7th overall pick in this past year's draft. The young man, infielder out of West Virginia, is in his first big league camp. He's bound for his first full professional season, and he sure seems to be on a on a high speed rail toward the majors. Certainly looking at a double A season at some point in time, if not higher, for him this summer. He has been very impressive. In fact, the manager spent a lot of time this week, one morning, just raving about J.J. Weatherholt. One of the quotes was that it's very impressive to see a young man so comfortable in his own skin. He's made great strides. He's been very solid and very aware of who he is at the plate. He's impressed veterans and coaches with his work away from the field, Jeff. And he's made strides at shortstop. Marmol says he's going to play him a lot as long as he's got him in camp until they put him on the backfields. What have you seen from him? What's your sense of this young man and what he could mean for the future?
Well, a couple things. One, obviously the Cardinals were lucky that he got hurt. That allowed him to drop in the draft to them. Mm-hmm. The other thing is when you get a high draft pick, it was nice for the Cardinals who are in this transition period. We'll stick with Mozeliak's phrase for it. They have a guy that's going to be able to, because he's a productive college hitter, is going to be able to rise quickly and be a plug and play guy sooner than later, yeah, versus drafting a prep hitter who's going to take, 2-3 years to make it. So a lot of, and just the thought of him becoming the Lou Whitaker to Mason Wynn's Alan Trammell for us Tiger fans, to have a keystone combination with the added benefit of a guy who could fill in at shortstop when Mason needs a break. A guy with some pop, a guy with some athleticism, a team that needs more athleticism. I don't know if he's going to be a superstar, but he's going to check a lot of boxes for a team that has a lot of boxes to check.
It's a pretty interesting comparison when you think of him as the Tommy Herr to Mason Wynn's Ozzie Smith. There's probably more a line there than you first initially think, right? I guess Weatherholt hit for more power, likely. And Ozzie's a Hall of Fame defensive player, and Mason will win some gold gloves. We'll see where his career goes. But it's pretty interesting tandem to build around, unless they need Weatherholt at third base all of a sudden. But, Weatherholt's done well at shortstop. He wanted to show that he could play that position. He told me early on in camp, he's like, I want to show that I can handle that position, not just stand at that position. And he's done well. He's getting a lot of playing time, and it's very impressive. And that brings me to the next young player, who's the other three up. Gordo, there are a handful of pitchers by now this long into camp who have thrown at least six innings. Of the group that has thrown 6 1/3 innings or more in Grapefruit or Cactus League play, there is only one who has yet to allow a hit, and that's Matthew Liberatore. And he would be 21 for 21 had his walk happened at a ballpark where there was ABS, because they likely would have challenged it. I guess you don't know where that would have gone, but they would have challenged it and at least given him a chance to go 21 for 21. So, he's been very impressive. He's maintained his velocity. He had a lot of pop on it there in a most recent outing there in West Palm Beach. He has taken what he did as a reliever and that kind of aggressiveness and that kind of confidence and shown it over a longer stretch now that suggests maybe starter. Where are you on his role?
Yeah, I think he just looks like a starting pitcher because he's got the mix and he's got the build of a guy that can just eat up a lot of innings. He just looks, and he's been a durable guy as a pitcher who can bounce back as a reliever and pitch again and again. And I just see him maybe as not a guy that's going to have a sub-3 ERA at any given season, but a guy that can just log a lot of innings and maybe have a 3.6, 3.7 ERA and get you into the sixth inning quite a bit. I just think, he's been the eternal prospect, right? He's been a top pitching prospect for seemingly forever, but he's not that old. And he's had a lot of experiences, good and bad, in the big leagues. He's continued to mature. And just listening to him talk, you like his mindset and his determination. I think this is a very interesting case. Now, will he ever make people forget Randy Arozarena? Probably not. But this could be a huge piece of this, providing some stability for this team as it tries to sort some things out this year.
quick aside, you think Randy Arozarena is off to help the Mariners offense be good enough to carry that that pitching staff to a division title in the postseason?
You know, the Seattle Mariners, that team that's just determined to be just a little bit short of doing that, right? I mean, they're going to be good again, but yeah, that team needs to go for it just once. I mean, really go for it. But then who are Cardinal fans to talk about that, right?
Right. Yeah, there's probably a parallel there.
Imagine your home totally organized. Closets by Design is offering 40% off plus an additional 15% and free installation. Schedule your free consultation today. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN for details. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
If your job at a healthcare facility includes disinfecting against viruses, you know prevention is the best medicine. And maintaining healthy spaces starts with a healthy cleaning routine. Grainger's world-class supply chain helps ensure you have the quality products you need when you need them. From disinfectants and cleaning supplies to personal protective equipment, so you can help deliver a clean bill of health. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Libertor finds himself in the, you know, through no fault of his own, he finds himself at two of the points that are kind of three down at this moment. He's pitched very well, as I described, but he also brings to mind this concern or this lack of clarity that the Cardinals have with what are they? Are they about the future, which they keep talking about, or are they about the now? And the lack of that clarity, you know, both in the direction they're headed, but also how urgent the clubhouse wants them to be now, I think is something that hasn't sorted itself out yet. That was true all winter as the front office professed the future, but yet couldn't make the moves that jump-started that. And now in the spring, where you have Oliver Marmol talk about some of the decisions that'll have to be made, Libertor's role included, where he said that's just his phrase is that has to be a larger room. That is, you know, that has to involve the front office. And what he goes on said is that like we'll have to involve the future front office too. So you have all these parts, all with like shared motivations, but different scales of it, right? Like they're all trying to move the organization forward, and the clubhouse wants them forward in an hour, and the coaching staff wants them forward in 3 weeks, and the front office wants them forward in a few months, and the future front office wants them forward for next year. So it's a lack of clarity that, you know, you wonder if they have it internally and they're just not sharing it, or they're not articulating it, or you just have this four-sided tug of war going on.
And I'll throw it back to you on a related issue. You've got some starting pitching prospects who are below the major league level. You got a funky left-hander whose mix suggests he could be an effective middle reliever. You've got a dynamic right-hander who cannot pile up innings as a starter, cannot stay healthy, but looks in short spurts, could be just dynamic. You got guys who are prospects that they want to develop as starters, thinking about, you know, 26 and beyond. But these are guys who could rise more quickly this season and perhaps help in this role you discussed. But again, tug of war, right?
Yeah. Well, you're talking about Tink Hentz and Quinn Matthews, I presume.
Well, right? Quinn would be the. I think he's destined to start. But okay. Cooper,
Cooper Jerpy. Yeah.
Yeah. He has that weird pitching style, which should be very effective. Is the release point and such, And again, he's not been able to stay healthy so far in the minors. To me, he's intriguing. He could be an intriguing option there, right? And so,
yeah.
And with Hintz, you know, he looked dynamic the other day, but can he hold up? So, yeah, those are – that just adds to the discussion because in the past, as you know, Derek, how many of these guys, they were wanted to be starters but end up in the bullpen out of need.
Right, and Libertor is at that juncture too. So is Gordon Graceffo, and that brings me to the next down of this three up, three down. And the Cardinals are doing this interesting thing where, and it, I mean, it's not like revolutionary. Every team does this, but like they picked up Rodri Munoz off waivers from the Marlins. He's been a starter for them. The Cardinals are like, let's look at how you do as a reliever. Let's change your routine. Let's find a way that this works. Let's use you more regularly, fewer days off in between. See if that brings some consistency to your routine and thus consistency to your command of pitches, et cetera, et cetera. Graceffo is, you know, doing a starter schedule, but they talk about what it would be like to unleash him in shorter bursts and what that might mean for how his stuff plays up, you know, his how what his fastball does. I mean, he has the look of a guy who is very Helsley-like in what his trajectory could be. I don't think that's overstated. You know, if given a chance to close, he, you know, I would imagine he would lock down saves. I don't know if he'd be as dominant as Helsley was as far as like throughout the league, but within that role, Graceffo has the stuff. And it seems like that upside. So is that get him in the setup role now? And that's the down is they have a lot of numbers for this setup role, but they don't have a Kittredge level clarity. And if they're going to pull this off again, where they're very protective and proactive of Helsley being the closer, and they're going to have leads to hold down, you know, they're not going to want to have ruptures in the sixth, seventh, or eighth inning. And does that mean Libertor's there? Does that mean, you know, they try to throw a bunch of different options like Graceffo, Munoz at it? Does that mean that JoJo Romero and Ryan Fernandez grab it and seize it, or that Chris Roycroft emerges? Like I said, they have numbers. But they don't have that like Kittredge clarity for that role. And that's a big thing, right, Jeff? I mean, didn't we see a Cardinals team with a losing record that had problems getting leads to the late innings, that had difficulty keeping Helsley available as a result?
Well, yeah, and I think if you're going to try to solve this with this Memphis shuttle, and there's some sense that there's some measure of that with every team running right. guys up and down, of course, but – you know, this has been, I think, one of my nagging points about the organization, even before it got to this transition stage, was to me, there was always a chance to invest more in numbers and not just a quality reliever or two, but do what other teams have done, which is really pound the reliever market for the right mix of guys and making sure that you've got enough of those. Right. And this year when they froze spending, well, the freeze came when there were a lot of these relievers kicking around. Right. And while they're still open to it, they haven't spent any money. No. And guys are signing left and right. So to me, this has been an easy area to invest in, and in an area that had the Cardinals have struggled with, both at high end guys or higher end guys. And then whether it's keeping them or acquiring them or, and just having enough numbers. But going back to Graceffo, I mean, there's a guy, didn't his velocity lag in, as mm-hmm. a starter in yeah. recent years? And now when I see that he touches 97 and he averages 96 in an appearance, that kind of gets my attention. I mean, I can start, yeah. I can kind of rally if he can be that guy with that pop and sets up the rest of his pitches, you know, maybe you're a step closer there. And, you know, these guys can't, all of them can't start. There's not going to be a spot for all of them. You know, you don't see Roby being groomed to be a reliever anytime soon, for instance. So
goodness, no.
So anyways, I it's fascinating, and I got to – we'll be probably doing the same discussion, having the same discussion in June, in July.
Yeah.
Yep, you know, yep. And is he closer to the trade deadline, right?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. No, and early April and late April. I mean, that's the thing that I'm really interested in, and, you know, not to tease too much, but that's the story that as soon as our conversation is done, I'm going to try to tackle is this notion of – you know, last year's blueprint worked. How feasible is that to pull off again with different personnel in the most volatile part of a roster, which is the bullpen? Like, did the Cardinals say, okay, this is a recipe, as Mike Matheny once called it. This is the recipe. Now we can go get different ingredients, but end up with the same result. Or do you have a recipe and you change the ingredients and it doesn't make the same souffle that you expected. You know, I don't know. I find that fascinating. They at least have a type that they want to explore and populate the bullpen with. They want these different variations, you know, ground ball guy left side, John King. Ground ball guy right side, all right, they'll find that. Strikeout guy left side, probably Liberatore, definitely JoJo. Strikeout guy right side, Roycroft Fernandez. And they want to stack that so that they have these alternatives to then bridge leads to Helsley, who's the hammer in the ninth. It's there for the taking, but I don't know if the volatility of a bullpen will allow it. We see it too often.
Yeah, and I think the thing, another nagging point for me is I think you always need to have, in today's game, besides a variety of relievers, left and right, a variety of pitch shapes, a variety of styles to create matchup situations for you in any given night. Everybody's embracing that. The Cardinals have attempted to do that for sure. But I think the other thing is, man, today's day and age, you better have, and I think a lot of the good teams do, you want to have three guys that can close the game, you know, for sure. Not even close the game, but highest leverage job, whether that the seventh, eighth, or possibly the ninth inning, wherever that point is, you want three guys that you really feel good can get you out of a jam. And it's hard. I mean, do you see two more guys besides Helsley that can rise to that level? You know, at times Romero was quite effective, but then, you know, he wore down as well. And so I don't know. I mean, there's good teams are doing a lot of great things with their bullpen. They're rethinking what they're doing. They're giving the manager so many options to try to get out of the jam in any given day to do something different.
Yeah.
And I think it's fascinating to see what's happened. The old days of color by numbers, relief usage, thankfully is out of favor. I think we're seeing a much more dynamic game and how pitchers are handled.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. And I think we're talking about it. You know, actually, to be honest, it's like we're talking about bullpens in three dimensions now, which is really nice, you know, like, and not two-dimensional, you know, roles and stuff. We're talking about it in three dimensionals, pitch craft, pitch shape, different angles of arms, different looks to give. You know, all of this is somewhat in response to the rising cost of things and also, you know, roster churn, right? It's sometimes it's a cover for that. But I do find it an interesting conversation as teams are, you know, I half expect, Jeff, to be honest, I would not be surprised at all if the Cardinals make some bullpen moves this summer that reflect who they're playing. Like, even like, all right, well, this guy we have at Memphis matches up better against these hitters. We're going to make this move and we'll have this guy in our bullpen to face the Reds, for example. Right. I would not be shocked at all if we see that level of kind of roster machination. I don't know. That also could be cover for a lack of clarity. Right. Because if there's performance, then there's not transactions. If there's performance, there are clear roles, as the manager was telling me the other day.
Yeah. The other aspect you're leaving yourself vulnerable to is the inevitable attrition rate of relievers and the inevitable need to shut guys down by sending them to the minors to rest and then come back. So yeah, it's actually, here's the world I find fascinating. It wasn't that long ago where you wanted a guy to just throw the ball by somebody really hard. And that was your best reliever. Man, pitch shape, pitch mix, the ability to get guys out with spin, man. And you know, the evolution of the dreaded sweeper or guys that could have just an unbelievably nasty pitch at two strikes. I think it's great for baseball, and I think the ability for teams and really more instructors and academies and these specialized pitching teaching operations to just to create different pitches out of whole, you know, and just create more dynamic stuff, more swing and miss stuff. It's a fascinating time for pitching, and where are the Cardinals and all that?
Yeah, no, they've lagged behind and they know it and they're trying to catch up. You know, they're you know, it starts with having the personnel, the staff and the tech, and that's where they're at. Big part of their push. Before we get to the final down, Jeff, how much do you think you'd be willing to pay for a veteran reliever? And, you know, how much trust would you put in any of the veterans that they could go sign at this point? There's still a handful available. You know, we don't, you know, the Cardinals have a budget. That's clearly what's going on there. They're telling people that, you know, they don't have much to spend. They've been saying that all winter long. So you'd have to find a value play, but how much would, is that worth to you?
Yeah. And I don't know that there's that guy out there other than just adding an, another candidate.
I mean, Phil Maton's out there. You know, Dave Robertson is out there. There's some options. They got experience. They got October weathering.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, Lance Lynn wanted to be a, you know, I want to go back to the bullpen, or at least he was thinking about doing that as in this.
Yeah. Winter. Lance Lynn's out there.
So, you know,
and Kyle Gibson's out there.
Yeah, and I don't know that Lynn could ever dial up enough heat to be a, an effective reliever. He certainly would have the attitude to come in the middle of the game. But, no, it's I, you know, until – and if they don't trade Nolan Arenado, it doesn't seem like they will anytime soon. Something's going to have to happen in the marketplace. And I don't expect that they have anything more than giving guys an opportunity. And there are going to be guys waiting just for the injuries to hit, right? If you're a relief pitcher in the market right now, it's, you're smart to wait it out because somebody's going to get hurt probably tomorrow, you know. In the bullpen somewhere, and so you're going to hold out, and then at that point you've got leverage. Nobody's going to sign now because there's no leverage.
Yeah. Well, that brings us to the final down, and that'll lead into the last part of the podcast I want to talk about. And the down is the offense. Look, they hit the off day, and they were hitting 184, slugging 316. Both of those ranked 30th in the majors for spring. They had an uptick over the next 3 days. They had 27 hits, and they had a couple doubles. Ivan Herrera broke his 0-for to start spring. But they got guys who are still kind of searching a little bit. Mason Winn is still looking as we record this for his second hit. Michael Ciani still looking for his second hit. Nolan Gorman had a bevy of strikeouts as well, though he's starting to turn the corner, you can tell, because he's starting to do some of the things that they've been working with him on, like as far as the direction of his swing and what he's trying to get. Same with Mason a little bit, trying to get more time, trying to meet the ball deeper over the plate, recognize pitches more often. That can be very difficult when timing isn't there. So, you know, there's like stories behind the box score, and I talked to them about this, but you know, the offense just hasn't arrived. They're at a very difficult ballpark for hitting. And they know it. They know that so much that they brought the walls in. But the opponents are hitting there too, Jeff. And they're not. Paul DeJong had a 3-run homer. You know, they're doing fine, putting up runs. So, how much concern do you have at this point of the offense?
Well, the guys we talk about get off to a tough start. You know, you've had great reporting on what Jordan Walker, where he was trying to get before he stepped on the sprinkler head.
Yeah,
you know, trying to get those line drives, trying to get, you know, locked in there, trying to feel just better at the plate, more confident. Talk about what they're trying to get done with Nolan Gorman, using the field, driving the ball, that left center field gap shot, some George Brett doubles would maybe make him look. I love making these really old man references, by the way. But just trying to get him to a better place mentally. These are two of the guys we talked about, you know, for weeks, really. And we've talked about really being pivotal to this team. For this season, and when they both get off to a difficult start and the weeks start to pass, I think that's where probably fans are the most concerned. I mean, I don't think you're too worried about Mason Winn, given what he's done at this level, mm-hmm. or Brendan Donovan, given what he's done at this level. Lars Nootbaar will get there to wherever his level is, and you got a pretty good idea what that looks like. The 788, 790 OPS is probably where he's going to land. So, you know, those two guys, it comes back to, you know, we talk about Contreras, it's dynamic. That's great. I think Herrera will hit. He'll get going because he's a hitter. He'll do the work. But, yeah, come back to those two guys, man. And how much is riding on all this? You say you got, what, 3 weeks to go here? One guy sitting out for multiple days with the knee?
Yeah. And look, you know, I figured it out that, you know, you take away Wilson Contreras' 7 hits and this – you know, this the regulars are hitting right around, gosh, about 130 or something like that. I guess if you take away Wilson's hits and Nolan Arenado's hits, the rest of the group that you expect in the majors is they're hitting pretty cool. Puny, about 120 or something like that. It's not standout. You know, Brent Brown spoke to him. He said he was not pleased with the first week of production, and he gave me reasons why. Again, beyond the box score, just talking about situationally what he was seeing game plan wise. He said that there might be some adjustment period just for him and the hitters, and that that might have been in play, which I thought was interesting. The manager was predictable with his response. You know, I asked him how much stock he put in or what we should look for beyond the box scores, and he said he didn't care much for what early spring box scores say. And I was like, well, that makes sense. You know, there's a lot more to it. And then 3 days happened. They got 27 hits. So I asked him if he felt the same way. To his credit, he was consistent. He said he felt the same way. You know, the hits weren't changing his perception of it. It just was more production. You know, because Jordan Walker could have a day like he did where three line drives, you know, as one of the coaches said, he hasn't had three line drives in three consecutive at bats in a while. He didn't get rewarded for any of them. You know, it's the Matt Holliday rule, right? Producer, not director. But it's, you know, it was a positive day. And they wanted to say, Jeff, look, you know, the box score says no hits, but that's three swings that you're going to get a lot of hits on. Which brings me to their dilemma, Jeff, the big lineup question, the one that has kind of been in the air and tried to tackle or at least illustrate in the latest issue of Right Fielder, the newsletter that I'm doing for subscribers. And it's whether or not you go with a lineup built for lumber or you go with a lineup built for leather, offense versus defense. Where do you stand on this?
Yeah, it's a good one, though. You know, I would tend to think that I'm going to initially say try to generate offense, but be ready to sub in Michael Ciani. Be ready to, you know, like Jordan Walker will spend a lot of time at the end of games on the bench, for instance. So, you know, start off with the offense as much as you can. Mm-hmm. See if Ivan Herrera's work as a, you know, with throwing mechanics, arm health, getting his throws off quicker, being stronger, all the work he's put in. See how much of that pays off. See how much you can get out of your outfielders, but be ready to sub in. If you get to situations in games where you want to protect. So because you have to build the lead before you can protect it. And right now I have a lot of questions about the offense. Can they, in the pitching, is likely not to be, it's going to be sub-dominant somewhere. It's going to be probably pretty average. Mm-hmm. So I'll probably start the season trying to score runs, but being mindful that you're going to have a lot of fielding replacements.
So the defensive save crew, the Good Hands Club, comes in for those good old defensive saves. We have to start tracking those again, like Harrison Bader once had, where he would come in with a lead of three or less and play the final inning, or he could earn it by playing the final three innings regardless of the lead. That's how we set it up, the defensive save.
Yeah, so here's the thing. I mean, you don't want Wilson Contreras having to catch any games, right? But he could, which means that you could use Pajes as a fielding replacement lane. How many teams change catchers in a game? Well, Cardinals could, right? They have both guys game plan for the game. Bring in their relief catcher. And have a third guy in an emergency could go back there for an inning and would, you know, probably get a broken hand on a foul tip, knowing Wilson's luck is one inning of catching all year. But you'd have to take that risk. So, I mean, that's weird to say that. But I mean, because that's one of your decisions, right?
If you go, it is, you know? Yeah. Yeah, I think that, I don't know though, they've really promised Wilson that he can retire his mitt.
You better have one just in there somewhere in the back of his.
He might have to borrow one. The focus is center field. That's sort of where. That's the tipping point, right? That's where rubber meets the road. That's where all the cliches gather. That's where all eyes focus. That's where the flashpoint of this decision is. Center field. If you go with offense, it's Lars Nootbaar. If you go with defense, it's Michael Ciani. If you go for the future, it might be Victor Scott II, who's been very aggressive and is off to a solid spring, strong spring. Very athletic spring, and also more aggressive on the base paths than he was last season. You got a choice here, Gordo. Who are you going to go with in center field, and what will guide your hand for that decision?
Yeah, I would probably, again, I'd be leaning toward trying Nootbaar to see if he can, you know, survive out there, and then before he shifts over to spell Jordan Walker and they bring Ciani in the game. Victor Scott, I think, could be your center fielder in 26. Heim may make that call. If he can go back and now have a strong year at AAA, which he needs to do, I think, to take that next step. I love everything about his potential and his coming into this year with a little better approach at the plate, the more athletic approach at the plate, the progress he's made there, the work he's done on his routes. I like just the fact he knows he has to steal bases at this level to be a big leaguer, to make an impact, and he wants to do that. I think there's a higher ceiling there, and as a nine hitter with who could hit 240 but steal a bunch of bases and chase down fly balls, I could see a future there. So, man, I'd probably just say start Nubar, be ready to use Ciani and get Scott ready. That's kind of a goofy answer, but it's kind of a goofy team that we have here.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, that's goofy answers for a goofy team. That should be the headline. Yeah, it goes back to the lack of kind of clarity, right? Like, that's creating some of this, and it's also informing so many of the answers we get, both from the front office of the present and both from the manager, you know, as he describes this dilemma, you know, Liberatore, what is he going to be? And what is the team's focus? The lineup, what is it going to be? And what is the focus? I think, Jeff, you know, there is real anecdotal and statistical evidence that the Cardinals are at their best when they side with defense. You know, we saw the attempt to chase offense a few times, and inevitably it snaps back to a pursuit of defense. I don't know if that, some of that has to do with the ballpark that they play in. Some of that has to do with other things. You know, the roster that they have at the time and the lack of production, offensively, but time and time again, what keeps them in games, it seems, is their defense. And they need a 85 Bears opponents, then that's what they're going to do. But you're right about the pitching. They might have to win some 9-8 games, some 10-7 games. And then we're back to the conversation about how do they bridge that lead to Helsley. I mean, it's very fascinating how they have somewhat of a Mobius strip when it comes to a roster. Every time you get to a question, it circles back on itself to a question elsewhere on the same roster. So they have this Mobius strip of a roster. You never quite get to a clear direction.
Yeah, I think a lot of times you're going to make a decision based on your pitcher that day, obviously home or away. But, you know, if Miles is pitching at home and you know that there's a lot of gap to cover and the balls are likely to be in play, even though he's trying much harder to get, you know, lesser contact hitters, he's trying not to just have that ball come right down the middle on two strikes. But balls are going to be flying toward the outfield, right? And, you know, that's where, you know, how many times did Ciani go out? I mean, his ability to take balls out of the gap. And
it's pretty impressive.
It's mind-blowing. I mean, time after time, your balls had no chance of being caught. So, yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. And it's going to change opponent to opponent, pitcher to pitcher, ballpark to ballpark. Good luck, Ollie. Good luck, man. And I'm not sure he's going to be embracing the goofy answer for a goofy team explanation when you're asking him after a game, Derek, about why did he do something. I had to have a goofy answer because this is kind of a goofy team. So I decided to put, you know, that's how Alec Burleson ended up in doing this or that, you know, at a given time. That's why he started in right field today and when he should be a DH.
Yeah, I don't know if he listens through the first, you know, definitely he listens through the first 30 minutes of the podcast. I don't think he listens for the next five. I think he's out by then. But he might throw it back at me on FanDuel Sports post game. You know, the goofy answer. He'll find a way to throw that at me if he even gets this far. Yeah, you know, in the end, Jeff, the answer is always going to be production. And any sort of dilemma that they have in center field hinges on Nolan Gorman producing enough to play at second base. Because if he doesn't, then Brendan Donovan is at second base and the questions of the outfield is or anything. It comes down to who's doing more. Is it Ciani's defense that does more for the team or is it Gorman's bat? That seems to be where really, you know, center field is the focus. But, like, if you distill it down to where that decision will be made, it's the production of Gorman. And does that surpass the defense of Ciani? Because all these other guys, Burleson and Contreras and Nubar and Donovan, they're going to be in the lineup. They're going to be a big part of this. Jordan Walker is going to get to play a lot But if Gorman struggles to make contact, then their second baseman is Brendan Donovan. You know, I guess the jumble would be if Thomas Sagesi is suddenly that guy. But it really does come down to, you know, weighing one guy's bat and power potential over the stability of a dynamo in center field.
Yeah, and Ciani, if he could be the guy that he was before he got hurt, a resourceful hitter,
yeah,
who could work pitchers, who could bunt, yeah, who could find situationally, was a smart player, yeah, a resourceful hitter, a guy that did not hurt you and lower in the order. Yeah, I mean, it's just fast. The whole thing is fascinating. And when the dominoes start falling, and when they fall the wrong way, Derek, and all of a sudden, you know, you're in situations where you're having to pinch hit for good fielders because you're playing catch up, and now you got a mishmash fielders out there at the end of a close game because things. I'm sure Ollie will want to go into opening day with a vision of how most games are going to play against certain types of opponents, certain pitchers. Yeah. You have an idea, but who knows, man? Will he have that chance? He has 3 weeks to get there.
Three weeks, and we didn't even get to the point that, man, this lineup might tell us a lot by who's at leadoff. If it's Brendan Donovan, that's a different look. But if they need Brendan Donovan elsewhere in the lineup, and it's Mason Wynn, and then you're talking about Ciani and Mason Wynn as the wraparounds, we'll see. They're gonna need strides from somewhere. That's the key. That's the other part of this. You know, the answer that's not goofy at all is they need a young player to stride forward and join the wild rumpus of offense, or else the lineup will lag. You know, that's just what it comes down to.
Well, you're going to make everybody, you're going to educate all of our subscribers with your newsletter on this topic. I'm eager to see that.
Yeah. It comes out every Friday, Jeff. Just like the podcast comes out every week. So we have, we promised them when we started recording this, new things for 2025. Not a transition year for us, more of an acceleration year for us to expand the coverage, to bring you in on the best podcast, to do videos. And then of course this newsletter that people can subscribe to at stltoday.com. It's called The Right Fielder. That's WRITE. Get it. Right. Okay. We're good. Yeah.
Right. Very good.
All right. Yeah. It's there. And it comes out every Friday straight to your inbox. From my keyboard, usually I file it probably, I don't know, 2-3 hours earlier, and then the way it hits the inbox is there. Jeff, thank you so much. 3 weeks to go, and then I will see you for Cardinals opening day, one of the rare times here in the past 20 years that the Cardinals will have MLB opening day at their ballpark. They won't open on the road. Instead, they're going to welcome an interleague home series right away. Twins come to town for the opener, and then the Angels sweep through we'll see if future manager Albert Pujols will be there as well, as he made it very clear in his arrival at Angels camp that is his aim. It certainly seems like it's going to happen for him somewhere sooner rather than later. He's put in the time. Very impressive work by him. We do know that he will be managing Team Dominicana, the national team from the Dominican Republic, for the World Baseball Classic, and all eyes will be on him during that tournament, unless he has a major league team that he has to run and bow out of doing the WBC because he's otherwise engaged. We'll see how that goes, and I'm sure we'll talk about it. That is Jeff Gordon, sports columnist, tip sheet author at stldayday.com, also founder of the Antlers at Mizzou. A story.
Yeah, thank you, world.
Yes. Yeah. Well, the world says you welcome for that, especially that little corner of the world of known as Lawrence. They're very thrilled by your contribution to Big Eight basketball. Was it Big Eight basketball then? It was
back then, man. Again, I'm old.
Or was it Big Six?
Not quite Big Six. No, it was actual Big Eight.
It was Big Eight basketball. Your contribution to Big Eight basketball, and now SEC stardom. So, Jeff, thank you so much. You can find all of his work and all of our constant Cardinals coverage at stltoday.com, and in the pages of the Post Dispatch. You can find the best podcast in baseball wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe and review the podcast. That helps us know the community that we're reaching and how well the podcast is doing. but also what to do next with the podcast. It's super important that we hear from people, what they like, and get their support. So thank you so much for everybody who's listened to this for so long. We're in their 13th season, and we'll steam forward. We'll sprint forward. 3 weeks to go, and then I'll see you at Busch Stadium, Jeff.
All right, looking forward to it.
The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design. I will talk to you soon.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.